Back in 1952, 17-year-old Bob Kester, driven by his passion for jazz and blues and in need of a place to put his collection of 2,000 albums, opened the Jazz Record Mart in St. Louis. A year later, he started his own label, Delmark Records, which is now celebrating its 50th anniversary with the release of a 2-CD set. It includes a previously unreleased track from the first recorded band on the Delmark label, the Windy City Six, playing Royal Garden Blues, which we're listening to now. Kester says the record label is like an overgrown hobby for him. It's the record store, now located in Chicago, that has enabled him to record such blues and jazz artists as Buddy Guy and Junior Wells, Sleepy John Estes, Otis Rush, Sun Ra, and Archie Shepp. Over the years, Kester has been a mentor and father figure for many Chicago musicians. He's considered one of the major forces behind the blues revival in the mid-60s. This year, the Chicago Blues Festival and the Chicago Jazz Festival are both planning special lineups to celebrate Delmark Records. Terry spoke with Bob Kester earlier this month.
Bob Kester, welcome to Fresh Air and happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
I thought we could start by playing what I believe is a track from your first blues LP, featuring the singer and pianist Speckled Red. Was this, in fact, your first?
Yes, the first blues artist I recorded back in, I think, 55.
Well, tell us who he is and how you ended up recording him.
Well, Speckled Red was one of the pioneers of boogie-woogie piano, pre-Pete Johnson, Albert Ammons, born in the late 1890s. We had no idea. I was living in St. Louis at the time, just beginning to get started in the business, and had no idea he was in the city, in St. Louis. And he was discovered by a guy named Charlie O'Brien, a policeman, whom I met at the St. Louis Jazz Club, who wanted to look up some old people. He had this veneration for old people because his parents had been killed in robberies. And we gave him a list of blues artists who were around St. Louis, and he found all of them, and one of them, Mary Johnson, Lonnie Johnson's ex, happened to mention, oh, I saw Speckled Red the other day. So, and when you hear the record, I think people understand if their concept of boogie-woogie is Otis Spann or Roosevelt Sykes or Albert Ammons, they can see how different this is. This is regional boogie-woogie from Georgia.
Well, let's hear Speckled Red's version of Cow Cow Blues as recorded by you in 1956. Speckled Red, recorded in 1956 on the Delmark label, and my guest Bob Kester is the founder of the label, and Delmark is celebrating its 50th anniversary. Well, let's hear another recording that you've made that's on your new 50th anniversary anthology. Now, why was Big Joe Williams willing to record for you, Bob Kester, who at the time was a very young, inexperienced producer with very little track record?
Well, whether he was on Delmark or BJ or trumpet, he was getting union scale, and the sad fact was his records weren't selling very well. I think he was intrigued with the idea of being on an LP.
Was this his first LP?
Oh, yeah.
He'd made 78s and 45s before that?
It came close to being the first LP of Mississippi Country Blues.
This is a great track. Why don't we hear this 1958 recording featuring Big Joe Williams doing Midnight Creep. Now, this is actually previously unreleased. I think it was recorded for that first LP that you were referring to, but it wasn't released as part of it. Why not?
We just never had the money. Joe is just a fountain. It's just like turning on a water tap. The music would come pouring out, and he would record an enormous amount of material at every session, and you just had to go through and pull out what you felt worked together as an album. You try to program an album, and I was trying to program an album toward ears that weren't yet geared to blues. You never needed second takes with Big Joe Williams.
Okay, well, here it is from 1958, Big Joe Williams, Midnight Creep.
Lord, I wonder where my baby gone is. Well, I wonder where my baby gone is. Since she left this morning, I haven't did nothing wrong. Well, I feel like walking, baby, talking all night. Well, I feel like walking, baby, talking all night. Well, the woman I'm loving, she sure don't treat me right. Well, I wonder why my baby done it home. Well, I wonder why my baby done it. Gone left me, I sure don't feel wrong. I got 19 women, Lord, I want one more.
Big Joe Williams, recorded in 1958. That track is featured on the new Del Mar Records 50th Anniversary Anthology of Jazz and Blues. My guest, Bob Kester, is the founder of Del Mar Records, and he also runs owns the Jazz Record Mart in Chicago. You know, if the guitar playing sounded a little unusual on that, it's because one reason is because Big Joe Williams played a 9-string guitar. Tell us a little bit about that guitar.
Well, Joe got tired of people borrowing his guitar or just picking it up between sets and playing it. So he rigged up the 9-string. It was, I think, to some extent a gimmick. And he apparently had some kind of strange tuning that other people couldn't cope with. And that had a lot to do. That's what he says was the reason. But, of course, he developed a rather unique sound eventually.
It sounds like a pretty weird reason to start playing a 9-string guitar.
Well, those guitars were usually his most valuable possession, and
right.
He didn't want people messing with it.
Some of the people who've worked in your record store have gone on to be, you know, record producers or recording artists. Mm-hmm. One of the people who worked in your record store, Bruce Iglauer, founded Alligator Records, which is a blues label in Chicago. And in an article about you, he was quoted as saying about you, he's terribly argumentative. He hardly says anything nice about anybody, but he's just as generous as hell. He almost fired me a couple of times, mostly for good reasons. And at the same time, he was extraordinarily nice to me. It's hard to explain. Bob will snarl at people. He used to break 78s over his employees' heads. So I want to hear about you breaking 78s over your employees' heads.
Oh, well, we always have 78s that are worthless. And 78s break pretty good, pretty well. I always made sure they weren't Columbias, because Columbias had paper lamination in them. They made them a deadly weapon. Or Edison's, which are terrible. Well, Edison's are too valuable. I don't think I did that very often, and it was pretty much a jovial thing. And there were probably records that were cracked anyway. Happily, nobody got hurt. I've been called a curmudgeon, and when I got married, back in 67, people would approach me and say, hey, you know, you're mellowing out. What's happened? Well, at least one of life's problems has been solved. As the money got better, I probably got a little easier to get along with. We still have our arguments, though. I doubt the two of us would ever agree on a mix. You know.
Did you ever break a 78 over somebody's head and realize years later that
It was
actually a decent 78 and was worth a lot of money?
No, I always make sure it was something by Perry Como. Perry Como was on Victor. They're the most brittle, breakable records ever made in that period.
Now, I believe that the best-selling record in the Del Mar catalog is an album that you recorded in 1965 with guitarist Buddy Guy and harmonica player Junior Wells.
Yes, Hoodoo Man Blues. It's our, I guess, our hit, closest thing to a hit.
How many copies does that mean?
About 250,000 mm-hmm. that I know of. There were licenses made to unethical foreign labels who pressed records and shipped them over here in boatloads that might have upped that somewhat.
This album with Junior Wells and Buddy Guy sold better than anything else in the Del Mar catalog. What do you think it was about the music and the time and place that made it do so comparatively well?
Well, I think to some extent we got in on the ground floor. It was the first time a working Chicago blues band went into a studio to make an album rather than a single. And, well, Junior Wells is a heck of a band leader and organizer. It's an aspect of his talent very few people have ever paid tribute to. And we just sort of, I think people maybe were looking for something in Chicago blues beyond the reissues of the Chess, Muddy Waters, Howling Wolf, etc. And there was a certain freedom of time. There was no 2.5-3 minute limitation. Oddly enough, it got a 2-star review in Downbeat, but it did pretty well in the folk press.
Well, you know, on the new Del Mar Records 50th anniversary collection, you include a 1953 Junior Wells recording. That's a session that you actually leased from another record company. So I thought we could play that 1953 session, which is Junior Wells' first recording session, back-to-back with mm-hmm. something from Hoodoo Man Blues, the record that we've been talking about that, mm-hmm. that you released in 1965.
You can hear Junior's voice grow up between the two dates.
So here it is.
Back and hold, baby, one more time. I ain't doing too bad, babe. I got you on my mind. Hey, 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 hey. You're having a darn good time. Somebody help me. I can't help myself. I can't help myself. I'm not doing too bad, baby. You know I ain't got no brand new band. Hey.
That's two recordings by Junior Wells, the first from 1953, the second with guitarist Buddy Guy, recorded in 1965.
What did you grow up listening to, and how were you exposed to it?
Well, my grandfather had a collection of classical 78s. He died when I was very young, but when we moved into his house, the records were still there, and there was one by the original Dixieland Jazz Band, and one by another group, the California Ramblers or something. That was probably the first jazz records I played, but I had polio in sixth grade, and I heard the Eddie Condon show, the Saturday afternoon jam session, and that had a lot to do with it. But that was, when I was growing up, it was the tail end of this big band swing era. That's the only time when jazz was the popular music in this country, roughly 1935 to the middle 40s. So I got to hear a lot of Basie, and not a lot of Basie and Ellington. They didn't get that much airplay in those Jim Crow days. But I got to hear a lot of Woody Herman and Charlie Barnett, and some of Basie. I was able to go see Basie at the Miller Theater. I guess that's the first live jazz I ever heard. And Jimmy Rushing still singing with him. That must have been 47 or 48, something like that.
Did music keep you company when you were stuck at home with polio?
Well, I wasn't. By the time I got out, I kept looking for good jazz when I was in the hospital. When I got home, I didn't want to be around the house. I wanted to get the heck out and around. And I was encouraged to ride bicycles and, you know, to put my legs back into shape.
What's the blues and jazz scene in Chicago like now? And do you feel like you're keeping up with the musicians who are playing today?
Well, I've done quite a few 50th anniversary interviews, and I do get a little frustrated that I'm glad you mentioned that, because we are still recording. We're not just living on records we made in the 60s. There's a lot of good blues in Chicago. There's a lot of clubs, and there are still, and seem to be growing, ghetto blues bars that almost disappeared with the crack epidemic and with the exodus of the musicians to the north side, where, of course, the money was a lot better. It's still a scene, and it's still part of the folkiness of blues is still there. There's still the connection with the South, the old South. The jazz scene, a lot of the AACM people have left, but we've still got Fred Anderson in the straight-ahead field. We've still got Von Freeman. You don't need too many. And visiting New York musicians are sometimes a little bit astounded at what a high percentage of the Chicago jazz men are working regularly, whereas in New York they're sitting around waiting for a gig on the road or something.
Well, we should end with a jazz recording. I should ask you if you have a favorite from the 50th anniversary collection that you'd like to play.
The stuff I'm most proud of is the Roscoe Mitchell and the other AACM records. Part of the catalog that I think is our most important contribution to jazz. We did the first AACM record, the first Roscoe, the first Braxton, the first Mulhall.
What's the acronym?
The Association for Advancement of Creative Musicians. This was a group of self-determinist avant-garde musicians in Chicago, and started in the early 60s. And gave birth to all these guys that I've mentioned and many, many more.
And it was the genesis of the Art Ensemble of Chicago.
Right, yeah. I think that was the most important music happening anywhere in the world at that time. I mean, it had its counterparts in Kansas City, St. Louis, and New York, Boston, Philly, and so forth, and later in Europe. But I think it's our most important contribution. But I have to say, I really enjoy the older stuff more.
So you
I'm
think...
very, very proud of our six sessions with six albums with Art Hodes. He's the only really great musician from the 20s that we took in the studio, although we got a lot of good Earl Hines stuff, too.
So you're proudest of giving some of the Chicago avant-gardists their start, but your heart is really with Art Hodes, the stride piano player.
Well, when I go to an avant-garde concert now, I can get into the music a lot better. But I like a drink now and then when I'm listening to music, and it's not really drinking man's music. It's thinking man's music.
Bob Kester, founder of Delmark Records, which celebrates its 50th anniversary this year. Here's a 1976 recording of Art Hodes playing Cakewalkin' Babies from Home. Thank you. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Phyllis Myers, Amy Sallet, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, and Anne-Marie Baldonado, with Patty Leswing, Ian Shillog, and Jessica Chu. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. For Terry Gross, I'm Barbara Bogave.